it's easy when you play with a bunch of rejects and a fat kid, Rodriguez.
Shut your mouth, Phillips.
Would you say crap face? I said you shouldn't even be allowed to touch a baseball. Except for Rodriguez, you're all an insult to the game. Come on! We'll take you on right here, right now! Come on!
It's time for another edition of the Publics and Privates OK Preps Podcast, presented by Skortle. And now, here are your hosts, Ben Johnson and Michael Swisher.
Well, I think I was kind of misleading when I said that we would be here all spring because we're back for, I think, our second episode in the springtime. But we are back with another episode of the Publics and Privates OK Preps Podcast. You'll just have to excuse us because we've been working so hard in the spring months and, you know, really churning out a lot of stuff these last couple months. But welcome to the podcast. You may remember me. My name's Ben Johnson with my co-host, Michael Swisher. He is waiting to introduce himself. So, Michael, how are you?
Hey, man. You know, to be fair, pretty chilly outside. So it's really like still the end of winter. So it's kind of like we never went away, honestly.
That's true. So should probably expect some sort of basketball or something going on here in the next couple days or two. Like maybe you'll just swing by the State Fair Arena just for the heck of it and maybe see what's going on. Probably just be some cows or something. I don't know.
More than likely a horse show going on this time of year.
Probably some sort of convention in the buildings off to the side, like a gun show or something. Who knows? I wonder if parking is an issue whenever May rolls around like it is in March. Do you think that's a thing or is it just us complaining about it? Or me really specifically?
Honestly, I think whenever they have some of their bigger horse shows, I'm sure that parking can be an issue if they got some other stuff going on there. But I have a hard time imagining that it gets as bad as it does those first couple of weekends of March. But last couple of years I haven't had to worry about that. Got a parking pass, thanks David Glover.
Shout out to David Glover, who, in fact, has been super busy this time of year trying to manhandle all the he does golf and tennis, I believe. I can't remember if he does anything else, but I would imagine between those two sports alone, he's run pretty ragged. Probably got to hang out a few days at a golf course near you. I know all the tournaments were spread kind of amongst the state. I know there was one here in Tulsa. I know some of the boys' tournaments were spread between Lawton, Ardmore, then a couple in Oklahoma City, maybe one, was there one in Guthrie or somewhere up that direction? But I know all the girls were pretty much in Oklahoma City as far as I can remember.
Yeah, pretty much spread out like you said, but hey, how cool was it? 3A boys getting to play Tulsa Country Club. I believe that's the first up there, and talked to Coach Combs here at Kingfisher, and he said the course was fantastic and really challenging, and that it was a big honor for his kids to get to play there.
Yeah, I think the last time TCC had hosted a state tournament, I think 5A was there a couple years ago. I'm just trying to do this by memory, but I think Bishop Kelly was in the top three or four. I don't think they won it. Honestly, it escapes me who won it back then, but it might have been Bishop McGinnis. I mean, they're always at the top of the leaderboard. But, yeah, TCC, it's a great spot to host state golf. You're not really expecting to come across it whenever you're driving through that part of Tulsa. I mean, you take a couple turns out of downtown and you're wondering where in the heck you are, and then you come across this real nice golf course that kind of unsuspecting whenever you come across it. Have you been out there?
I have not. I'm not one of the privileged and honored few to have stepped foot on that hallowed ground.
Oh man, well I will say back in the day in high school and all that, I was caddy at Southern Hills, and I always thought the view of downtown was always cool from the first tee, but I think it might even, the view from downtown from the clubhouse at TCC is pretty remarkable. So, yeah, you know, I know it's not exactly just a come-one, come-all type place, but if you ever get the chance, go out to TCC and kind of check out the view. It's well worth it. But with that said, we kind of got off on the old golf deal there, but
my bad.
No, we're good. We're going to come back to golf here in just a minute and hit on some of the state tournament highlights, but we were going to just kind of roll through some of the spring sports. Obviously this is the final weekend of everything going on. I know last weekend was kind of crazy with the weather rolling through Friday, kind of put everything in a bind. I know especially tennis wise, pushed some of the girls' finals back to Tuesday this week. State track, it pushed them to more so one-day events with timed finals instead of prelims. I know not everyone's a fan of that, but you know, at the same time, not all these athletes have a whole lot of time in their schedules right now, because this time of year they got to worry about athletics. If they're seniors, they got to graduate and all the stuff that goes along with that. You got this banquet, you got that banquet, you got this church service, you got this deal at a local establishment that you have to go attend. So, you know, I know the USSA has to work around all that kind of stuff with schools. So, you know, like I said, track was squeezed into one day, but this final weekend you get a little bit of everything except for golf and slow pitch. We've got all those wrapped up. But as far as baseball goes, we got 5A, 6A over here on this side of the state. We're recording this on Thursday, so we have a couple final scores already rolled in. We have Stillwater over Norman North, 6-2. Broken Arrow walked it off against Deer Creek, 2-1 in the seventh inning. And then Jinx beat Westmore, 1-0. So Owosso, Edmond, Santa Fe are playing currently. So far, I know last year was kind of West Side dominant, even though Union won 6A. But any thoughts on some of those schools advancing to the semifinals for this weekend?
Yeah, no, but you know, I always, especially since 6A has gone to the 6A and 5A have gone to the single elimination bracket. It's changed how they approach. I think, you know, their pitching order just a little bit. A lot of, you know, they kind of do what a lot of the smaller schools do, and you see them have to go with their number ones on that Thursday, and for the most part, some low scoring games, which is kind of the norm in that quarterfinal round. And you see that usually, unless the schools, you know, two schools have two excellent arms, you see those scores bump up a little bit in that semifinal round when teams go to their number two or number three arms.
Speaking of that, in 5A, Collinsville beat MacArthur 13-0.
Yeah, exactly. As I was saying that, I was like, well, and then Carl Albert and Collinsville.
Yeah, Collinsville won 13-0 against MacArthur, Carl Albert 14-0 against Claremore. Hey, back to your point, Pryor beat Piedmont 4-2, so it's kind of in line with what you were saying there. Duncan and Coweta playing now, so three of the four semifinal teams in 5A. I know 4A... For you, Kingfisher's in the field, but they got rained out. Everything will be Friday and Saturday. Looks like everything will be at Edmond North. Were the finals ever scheduled to be at Bricktown?
Yes. The plan was to have them Saturday at Bricktown, but now with pushing everything back and having to play the semis early, and I believe Bedlam Baseball Saturday night.
That's right. Yep.
Couldn't make it happen. So logistically, so to Edmond North we go, as opposed to Edmond Santa Fe.
All right. So 4A, everything Friday, Saturday. 3A got a late start today, but winners so far are Kingston over Jones 5-3, and then Marlowe over Lincoln Christian 12-5, and then in 2A. Silo over Hartshorn 7-1. Dale over Christian Heritage 11-0. It's weird that Dale would win. They're usually not very good in anything spring sports related, but that's a joke. If you're in Dale and you couldn't sense the sarcasm, it was heavily coded in sarcasm. Dale is quite dominant in everything that takes place on a diamond of some sort. And then Oktaha over Wellston 9-1. Any thoughts on Dale?
Well, I mean, obviously, the bats were going well today. I think a lot of people just assume when they look at that they're going to see a Silo-Dale matchup in the finals. But, you know, there's Oktaha right there sitting at number two, so we'll see how that goes. But you're right, Dale. I mean, it's been just a great sports season for Dale. Starting with fall baseball and obviously softball, and then you go into basketball, and Dale was ranked number one a lot of the year. And then the girls get to the finals, and now the girls, we'll talk about that in a minute, how they crushed it during slow pitch. I think we both called that at the beginning of the year, went out on that branch. And
yeah, big win.
The spring team now in the semifinals, so, you know, just a fantastic season for Dale.
Yep, and I know Latta and Mangum are playing now. Latta's always a strong team this time of year, so it'll be interesting to see how far, you know, how they figure into the mix moving forward. But, you know, you mentioned slow pitch. We can go ahead and circle back to the finals that got pushed back more so a week more than anything, because the middle of last week was kind of dicey with the weather and everything. So Everything got pushed back to this week. Large schools went Monday, small schools Tuesday. Broken Bow knocked off Southmore 19-6 to win the 6A title. It always kind of throws me off when slow pitch rolls around because I lose track of all the classifications because it's the one time that Broken Bow is in 6A and they're actually really good in it.
Yeah, I think we should do a name that class in slow pitch softball.
We should. And I'd be lucky if I got 25% right.
Exactly.
And 5A, Kellyville over Tahlequah Sequoia, 18-5. I know Kellyville's had a really solid fast pitch program, so congratulations to them for slow pitch championship over an always perennially strong team, Tahlequah Sequoia.
And I've got to imagine that Kellyville hasn't won just a ton of titles overall. Just not a school that you hear a lot of when it comes to state championships being won.
I think you're right, but I will effort some Kellyville knowledge here in just a second. For now, 4A, drop down. Oh, there's Dale again. Class 4A, Dale, 19, Silo, 4. I'm guessing that was probably a 4 or 5-inning game.
I think the run rules were plentiful for Dale really throughout the season as the bats. Yeah, I mean, that's the second state championship for Kellyville overall in baseball.
You beat me to it. I was going to see if you could guess what the other sport was, but
I'll guess baseball 44 years ago.
Well, you're a lot better at the math than I am. I'd have just 1975.
Only because I was born in 1975. Do I know?
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. Now you'll never forget that Kellyville won a state championship the year you were born.
There you go.
Although, well, who knows? You might forget it here in about 6 minutes. We'll see.
I think the scores are going to get bigger here. I think around 2A or so, though.
What's embarrassing for me about Kellyville is I covered them for 2 years at the Spulpa paper, and I still couldn't remember if they'd won anything. But I know they've been going to the football playoffs here recently. Always been decent at basketball. So congratulations to them for putting another trophy in the trophy case. I know that's going to be pretty special for them. Like you said, class 3A, a moderately high score, Navajo beat Amber Pocasset 14-6. Congratulations to Navajo. Any thoughts on 3A softball?
Probably not. There's not a whole lot. I can't tell you a whole lot about that 3A slow pitch, but we can talk 2A. I can tell you at least one player on the state championship 2A team.
Let's see. 2A. The win must have been at both of these teams. But, I mean, they had to have been on a field facing north with the south wind behind them because Binger Oney beat Shattuck 25-20. So, let's see. Binger scored three touchdowns and a field goal. They must have gone for two on one of the touchdowns and kicked a field goal. Shattuck, not as successful, and only got 20, which is weird. You would think Shattuck would obviously be the better football team, but we're talking slow pitch here, and Binger Oney was the top in 2A.
Lane Smith, sophomore, cousin of yours truly for the Bobcats. So there you go.
All right. So I imagine you were front row center cheering on Binger Oney, weren't you?
I had a prior engagement, but I was honestly keeping up with it on my score lap while I was sitting at the Elks Honors Banquet.
Oh, sweet. All right. Well, then we're going to get to Class A, and I think I saw Chris Wolfong post something. This is the second most runs scored in a, I don't know if that's a game period or just a championship game. Obviously, the record holder is Dale. Shout out to Dale. But Class A championship game, Kiowa 31, Varnum 7. I mean, I can't even fathom being the other team just watching someone else score 31 runs. I mean, that's just a lot of people running around the bases nonstop.
Yeah, I was talking to a softball coach yesterday and just talking about the amount of runs that have scored. And he said, you know, he was on an advisory committee and there's, you know, been some discussion amongst coaches and some coaches say we need to change the ball, and other coaches are saying the ball hasn't changed in years, but the bats have changed. And he said, you know, these bats are getting hotter. You know, they're going the opposite way of what baseball did. And said the bats are getting hotter and hotter. And he said, you know, he said, I, you know, 15 years ago, I put some beasts out there, and, you know, sometimes they wouldn't hit 5 home runs for their career. And he says, now I've got, you know, second basemen that are hitting 22 for a season. So it'll be interesting to see if anything is done in that respect, because these scores, I mean, what was that? I mean, that was they had 31 through, yeah, through 3 innings. It was 31-6 going in the bottom of the 3rd inning. So
Jiminy Christmas.
And so, but that's whether the wind's blowing out or not, that's just a lot of home runs.
You know, and I was last weekend, I got home from the state track meet, and I was doing some stuff around the house, and I flipped on the Bedlam softball game, and they were talking, and I think the Oklahoman also did something about the success of softball in the state. And I got to thinking, and I always hear this discussion a lot during fast pitch season, but I would like to know some of these smaller schools that are really successful in slow pitch, how they feel about it. But I know a lot of people would like to see Oklahoma go to 2 separate seasons of fast pitch. I don't know if that would ever happen. I don't know. You know, a lot of these programs, a lot of these slow pitch programs, you know, look forward to the springtime because they are all the better at it. But I'm sure college coaches would like to get a second look at all these players, because really the only thing I think you can take from slow pitch is someone's defense, maybe. I don't know how it would help recruiting or anything, but where do you stand on 2 fast pitch seasons?
I wouldn't be opposed to it. You know, Oklahoma is one of the few, I believe, that still has a slow pitch season. You know, it does, you know, if you're here to, you know, give kids a chance to compete in different activities, you know, maybe somebody get out there and play a little bit more in slow pitch that can't compete as much in fast pitch. And it's, you know, it's probably a little bit more. I mean, I've been to both state tournaments, and teams and fans, it means just as much to them to win slow pitch as it does fast pitch.
Right.
Overall, slow pitch is a more relaxed game and season. You know, I've been around that, and you know, maybe the coaches and players enjoy that just a little bit more. Whereas fast pitch, you know, that's the bread and butter. That's where it's made right there. And a lot of other states do have fast pitch in the spring, though, and Oklahoma has theirs in the fall. And I don't know if that's to the benefit or not, I wouldn't be opposed if they did have a second fast pitch season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, slow pitch is great for coverage. When I worked at the Tahlequah paper, it's a great area to be in because Tahlequah was good. Tahlequah Sequoia was good. Holbert earned a couple of slow pitch bursts. And if you're going to cover a slow pitch game, it takes about 45 minutes most times. It's about the quickest thing you can cover.
Unless it's 31-7.
Yeah, that's true. And I thought it was funny that you were saying that, was it Kevin Farr that was there covering one of the games, and some of the defensive configurations in slow pitch were quite unusual.
Yeah, eight outfielders and a pitcher. And that's how I can't remember the game now. I'll have to try to look it up. But
Dale and someone.
I don't even think it was Dale. Again, I'll try to find it.
That's okay.
That's they ended up winning. And so, you know, it's hard to – I think it was Silo. Yeah, Silo and Howe.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Silo – I think put eight outfielders out there and ended up winning 14-10. So
there you go.
Moving on to the finals, where their reward was a shot at Dale.
And they'll get maybe another shot next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, best shot at Dale is to try to put probably 9 players on the other side of the fence. So I guess 8, you need a pitcher, but
can you put people on the other side of the fence? Does it work like that?
I do not believe you can.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess just hope for next year. That's all you can do. But congratulations.
I would venture to guess this has been the most comprehensive slow pitch wrap-up on a podcast in Oklahoma this year.
I would say in history.
Yes.
I don't know that if you can go back and find podcasts of anyone in the state that was talking slow pitch like this. So So
did anybody listen to anyway?
That's right. So there you go. Get your fix of slow pitch right here. We had it all. So with that, we're going to move right on to track, because I know we got a lot of tracksters out there. Kind of a funny story. One of my coworkers at Blue Cross and Blue Shield, where it's my day job, not necessarily a coworker of mine, but she works in the building. Her son is actually a really good pole vaulter, Broken Arrow. Had no idea this whole time, but he was a regional champion last week, and he's going to be going for a state title at, I believe, 5A, 6A. Is that Moore, I think?
Yes.
Okay. Because yes. A and 2A were at Western Heights. 3A, 4A was in Catoosa. So, yeah. So now there's a lady in the building can talk pole vault with, so it's kind of interesting. But
there you go.
Look, I think his name is Brandon Hanuk. That's how you say his name. So be on the lookout for him. Pole vault, which is always one of the weirder track sports to me. I mean, it's always really interesting to watch pole vaulters compete. Like, because if you're in pole vault, you're usually super competitive about pole vault, and that's the only thing that you do.
It's like you're the kicker.
Yeah, exactly. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but yeah.
No.
But yeah, 5A, 6A this weekend.
You know, I know a lot of schools, especially smaller schools, they would put three kids in the pole vault so that, you know, because not a lot of schools would do it, and that would get you a lot of points at track meets.
Yeah, I about to say trying to rack up points. Speaking of racking up points, Kennedy Price at Weatherford, I don't know if you've noticed what she's been able to do. She's only a sophomore, but looking back, she's a two-time state champion now in cross country, and she's now state champion this year. And I want to say last year she won the same three events again, or I think she won the mile and 2 mile at least individually last year. But she won them again this year, won the 1600 meter, which is a mile, the 3200 meter, which is 2 mile. And then she was part of the 4x400 relay, which finished first. So in my opinion, I'd have to go back and maybe check with Will Fong or someone in the state who's a little bit more knowledgeable about cross country or track. But I would say through 2 years, she could be on track to be one of the best long distance runners the state has ever seen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there've been, you know, young ladies who have won, four cross country state championships, but you know, to do it in cross country, I don't know that they necessarily duplicated that in track. And, you know, I watched Kennedy play basketball too, and she was on a talented Weatherford team you put her at the top on a 1-3-1, and you know, she made life for opposing teams really difficult. Just an outstanding athlete.
Yeah, it was really impressive to watch her run. Got to see her run the mile. Won it pretty comfortably, and then she was the final leg of the 4x400 relay, because I think Vanita was pushing Weatherford there for a little bit, and then once Price got the baton, it was pretty much lights out for everyone else. She'll be interesting to watch in these next couple of years to see maybe where she finishes, if she doesn't finish atop the list in terms of greatness and as far as long distance runners goes. Short distance, Millwood's Damarian Houston in 3A was pretty impressive. Won the 100-meter dash. Like I said, they had to go timed finals, so they didn't really get to do preliminaries and narrow down the field. So it was two separate heats, which is why I think it was the 4x400 relay. There was one I was texting you and said, Kingfisher won their heat, but let's see if that matters here in a minute. And sure enough, Weatherford came along and made it not matter. So,
yeah.
Then there was Tuttle's Maddie Serber. She won the 100 and 300 hurdles in 4A. And you were mentioning Hennessy's Madison Collier. She set a record in discus.
Yeah, the state meet record. She won it. She's a sophomore, won it for the second year in a row. This year threw for 148.11, broke the old record of 148.6, set I think about 4 or 5 years ago. So only about 45 feet from the national record by Shelby Vaughn.
But, 45 feet.
But, you know, at the beginning of the year, and you know, I know there are a number of outfits out there, and everybody has their own rankings, but there was, a track organization that had Madison listed as the number one discus thrower in the nation in her age group, you know,
nice.
Sophomore year. So what is that, class of 2021?
Yeah.
Lived up to the hype. She's first in the discus by 15 feet and third in the shot put. And I think that's the same way she finished as a freshman in both events a year ago.
That's pretty cool. I always enjoy track meets. I know, as kind of the general public, if you were to show up at a track meet, it takes a little bit to kind of get your bearings. There's a lot going on at all times. If you've never been, it could be kind of overwhelming when you step inside the gate and kind of see everything that's happening. There's races lined up and going. Then there's people at the heat tent trying to get ready for the next race. So it's kind of chaotic. But once you figure out what's going on, it's really fun to watch. And one thing I like about track is it's really some of the best athletes in the state. I mean, they all kind of combine. Like in the fall, you get football, and in winter you get wrestling and basketball. But in track, it kind of takes a little bit of all sports combined and just kind of lets you know who might be the best athlete, period.
Yeah, and it's definitely organized chaos. But like you said, once you figure it out and you know what's going on, it's so fun to watch. And
yeah,
you know, and I'm not just talking about state, but you know, the one day meets where you might have somebody they start the high jump or the long jump, and then they've got to go run the 100 or run a leg in a relay, and then come back and finish the high jump or long jump. And you know, you see how good these kids are, and it's really spectacular to watch. The really good ones.
Yeah, no doubt. I over here in Catoosa, or on this side of the state in Catoosa, Chisholm girls won 3A, Weatherford girls won 4A. I think it's the second year in a row for Weatherford. They won relatively easily, 121 points compared to Plainview in second place with 72.5. 3A boys was Marietta with 83, and then 4A boys was Bristow for their second title in a row with 119. They had a lot of good, you know, they were balanced pretty much all over the place with throwers, runners, long distance, relay, and that's what it takes to win these track meets. And Bristow kind of had a little mix of everything. And I was going to pull up the small school one at Western Heights,
and the relays, it's where it's at.
Oh yeah, that's where your points are.
Yeah, because the points double, and I know there's been some discussion on changing that a time or two.
That'd be interesting.
Always worth keeping an eye on. And I don't know if you change it to where you make it the same as the individual events, or if you still weight the relays more. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you certainly get rewarded for being good in the relays.
That's interesting. I didn't know that was a discussion or a topic of discussion, but that, you know, like you said, that's worth keeping track of moving forward.
Maybe I just made it up.
Oh, maybe you did. Maybe you just tried to stir the pot. Mike Whaley will really appreciate that.
He's got nothing else to do.
That's right.
Except make sure you're not doing interviews on the infield at Catoosa.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wanted to put that on the rundown here of what we could talk about, but I figured I would let that go. I ended up getting my interviews done. You know, much to the chagrin of maybe one person working the track meet, but got it done. You can check out all those videos at squirtle.com. I think I had a chance to get somewhere between 8 to 10 athlete interviews. I know I got a Chisholm interview in there, talked to Maddie Serber, Devin Reed from Bristow, Stillwell Girl. Some of the names are escaping me right now, so go check those out at Squirtle. Check out some of the athletes' thoughts. You know, I would grab them as they come off the podium. So you're getting kind of what's going through their mind right the second they get their medals. In Class A, the girls' champion was Bossier City and Keys, not to be confused with Keys Park Hill. 2A girls, Watonga had 91 points. Class A boys was Thomas with 120. They didn't let anyone have a chance.
That was over before it started.
Yeah, they had 120 points. Bossier City had 58. So they nearly doubled up the second place team. And then Pawhuska won 2A boys at 85. So that is your track recap. Beyond that, do you have anything else on track, or would you talk some golf?
I don't know if you want the heartbreaking story of the year, locally for me anyway. But, you know, Cashin won 2A girls last year. And this year, talking with her coach and Tony Wood, I said, you know, is there any shot at a repeat? Because they did win their regional. And he said, no. He said, Watonga, it's Watonga's to win. They're going to run away with it. But he said, you know, it's a race for second place. And if you'll see on there, Cashin got third place by a single point, led by 19 points over Pawhuska, I believe, going into the final race, which I think was the 4x4.
Yeah, it is.
And they were in separate heats. Cashin was in the first heat. No shot to win the overall race, but all they needed to do was place in the top eight, score a point.
Right.
And or 2 points, whatever it was. 2 points is what it would have been worth. Pawhuska can't catch him. Last leg, down the stretch, I think a young lady from Warner got tripped up by, you know, on her own, and took the Cashin girl down with her. And Cashin, she did cross the finish line eventually, but she didn't have the baton. They got the did not finish.
Oh.
Still have the 19-point lead, and all Cashin needs is for Pawhuska to not win it. Pawhuska wins it at the wire, by 3/10 or less of a second, and, you know, wins the relay and gets runner-up. So, you know, it was like talking to Tony Wood, he's like, it's like we lost second place twice, once and both at, you know, basically at the wire.
Man.
I've seen the video of it, and poor the young lady, she just fell down, and there was nothing, you know, bad intentioned about it at all. She was fell down, and the Cashin girl was on her heels and just happened to fall down with her. But it's a heartbreaking way for your season to end that way.
Oh, no doubt. That's, you know, you can always tell when someone falls down on the track because there's a collective gasp from the crowd.
Yeah.
So you can always kind of tell what's happening. That's because there would be times, and I think it was a lot of times you'll get that in the hurdles. You might look away for a second and you'll hear a collective gasp, and it's someone hit a hurdle and then they end up falling down to the track. So, but yeah, track season comes to a close on as a whole. I always like track season. I know you can go several different ways during the spring, but I never can. You just texted me the video then. All right. I'll make sure to check that out. But, I will transition us to golf. I'm trying to pull up some golf results here. We can start with the girls. Off the bat, 2A girls, Hocoma Christian School and Regent tied for the title. And it was OCS that won the playoff. But Jenny Rowers, Regent Prep, was the medalist overall. She won by 4 strokes. And I actually did. I have a story posted on the Squirtle website. If you want, kind of tried to compile all the golf stuff together. It's kind of overwhelming, so I just did top 20 in each class and did the team stuff, so you can check that out. I'm trying to get all my scores here. 3A, Westwood and Norman, it was Plainview. No surprise, Plainview's dominated girls golf. Reagan Cheney won medalist honors. And 4A, Hilldale. Once Hilldale and Plainview were split up, it was pretty much a no-doubter as to how those were going to go. Hilldale won 4A by more than 100 strokes. It's unbelievable. Kinsey Kirkhope.
Yeah, it was. They were dominant throughout. It was pretty impressive to watch. That was over.
Yeah.
Obviously over on day one, but then they did even better on day two. So
yeah.
I think their five bag came in on the second day with an 82. So
jeez.
Their five bag placed 11th, or I don't know. I assume it's their five bag.
Yeah.
Their worst score was 11th best overall.
So, yeah, 171.
That leads to a 616.
Yeah, no doubt. Kinsey Kirkhart, pretty cool. She won first place individually. Same thing that her sister accomplished a couple years ago. So no longer does Katie Kirkhart have bragging rights in the Hilldale or in the Kirkhart household. They now get to share bragging rights. 5A was Durant. Durant continues to be one of the top 5A golf programs. Blaine Barker won individual honors.
Don't you want to go one stroke more, one stroke less?
I know.
Shooting the 666 there.
Anytime if I end up with a $6.60 total anywhere, I always like offer to give them a penny or whatever. It's like kiss of death.
Keep it.
If you're Durant, you definitely just kick the ball into the water or something on the last day. Yeah. I mean, you won by 14 strokes. What's it going to hurt, you know?
Yeah, you got it wrapped up.
Yeah, exactly. And then 6A, it was Edmund North getting past Jinx. Top of the leaderboard was Sydney Herman from Ponca City, who beat Emma Shelley from Bartlesville by 4 strokes. and I will open up boys. We're in 2A at Trosper, golf course in Oklahoma City. Turner finished atop the leaderboard, 924, and it was Connor Boydston from Big Pasture who won medalist honors. In 3A, I could kind of hit on, was at Tulsa Country Club. Regent Prep won, and maybe the deepest field.
No doubt.
Okay. I was going to try and give 6A a little bit of credit, but...
Yeah,
whenever you combine Regent Prep, OCS, Christian Heritage, some of those schools... That's some pretty dynamite individuals. I know Jackson Dowell is committed to OU. He won medalist honors, won in a playoff against Christian Heritage, Drew Goodman.
Who is also committed to OU.
Yeah,
they actually needed a two-hole playoff. They played in the Kingfisher Invitational and both shot 65s, I believe, five unders, and went to a two-hole playoff. And I think it was Goodman that got Dowell this time, that time. And Dowell returned the favor when it mattered most.
Well, now they can duke it out. Well, they still have – I think Dowell is only a sophomore or junior. I don't know about Goodman.
Goodman's a sophomore.
Okay. Well, geez, we'll have to look and see where 3A is going to be next year. I don't know in terms of where if any of these schools will get bumped up. I don't know how that'll shake out before next year. But if they're in 3A again next year, start penciling where that state tournament's going to be. If you're going to have players like that, some of these more elite golf courses in the state might just start kind of. I don't know if they do a bidding war or whatever, but hey, there you go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're always looking for places, but I sent it to you earlier today that some of the Dowell and Goodman play in Kingfisher twice a year. Actually, they both come to the Invitational and then to the 3A qualifier. Kingfisher normally hosts that. So, a few years ago, Brad Dahlke and Mason Overstreet are here in the 2A regional going head-to-head for 36 holes. I mean, how much fun is that to watch two of the best junior golfers in the nation going at it? But 3A is loaded with excellent players and the top six or seven teams is just really good golf. The top six or seven and 6A obviously are really talented too.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the same way. I don't know that it's quite as star-studded, but in 4A, you get Heritage Hall, Cashel Hall, Holland Hall. I mean, they're bound to have some good golfers mixed in there, but yet above the fray, above everyone else, is Ada's Max Roberts, who finished first four strokes ahead of Drew Mabry of Holland Hall.
Yeah, and William McDonald, he was a couple strokes back of Mabry. He was close last year, I believe, maybe second medalist last year. All-state in basketball. He's headed to Arkansas to play golf. Just a well-rounded young man there.
Yeah. 5A, I think this might be the Hilldale version in girls golf, but Guthrie is pretty dominant in 5A, which is, you got Bishop McGinnis and Bishop Kelly on your heels. But Guthrie won its second state tournament in a row. And then had
he's a golf coaching legend now, just an official, but now state championship coach as well.
Yeah. And then Luke Morgan won the individual title, and then 6A, it just depends on whether Owosso or Edmund North are going to pass the baton back and forth, and Edmund North ceded the crown to Owosso this year. The Rams won with an 897. Edmund North and Stillwater both had a 901. I would have to guess that was probably the best team run. I don't think any of the others were that close. Yeah. Owosso, Edmund North, and Stillwater all there bunched together. I know the Stillwater folks were pretty high on their chances, and then Edmund North wasn't that far off either. So a lot of quality golf. 6A boys, I know that one was here last year at Forest Ridge. Edmund North won pretty comfortably last year, but Owosso, thanks to Corey Bird, he's always got them on the hunt in 6A. So another year come and gone for golf. I didn't really get a chance to talk about it much throughout the season, but golf tournaments are pretty fun to go and attend. I know it's kind of like track. It's not as chaotic, but it's spread out. It's kind of hard to tell what's going on, mainly because you don't have a scorecard going the whole time. But It's kind of fun. It's really the best thing to do is sit at the clubhouse and watch the scores roll in and just kind of listen to some of the golfers tell their stories about what happened out on the course.
Yeah, I was able to go out this year and watch a little bit of the 4A girls on the second day. And I walked the back nine, and, you know, it's fun to, you know, because, you know, every shot matters, and just to kind of see the ups and downs and the struggles, and you start those last couple holes, you start to hear scores that are coming in, and, you know, what is this, you know, what does this young lady need to do to, you know, close it out? And, you know, there's a lot of times it comes down to that last hole, that last group, that last hole. But it's really a lot of fun to watch it.
Yeah, I always have fun every time I go to a golf tournament. I know that sounds, I mean, people might be like, well, it's high school golf. How much fun can it be? But it's actually a lot of fun.
Like I said, you know, when you've got, you know, Drew Goodman and Jackson Dow duking it out, it can be a lot of fun because, yeah, you know, those guys can go low at any time. In fact, who was it? Dowell at Lincoln West a couple weeks back shoots they're playing a 36-hole tournament, and on his second 18, he shoots a 62, one off the course record. Here, you know, we're talking a sophomore, junior in high school, one off the course record, and he had 3 putts. It can be a lot of fun because there's a lot of drama out there. You got a young high school kid that's darn near shooting a course record on an Oklahoma City course.
Yeah, but the coaches at Norman, I know they have things rolling right now anyways, but I'm sure they're quite excited about what their future lies ahead anyways with those guys heading their way before too long.
Oh, no doubt.
In soccer, be the last sport to kind of hit on here. We have state championships coming up Friday and Saturday. 6A boys is Union and Jinx at TU. That sounds familiar. Like it's happened in other sports. Norman North and Mustang girls at Taft Stadium. Both of those are Saturday. 5A boys is Friday. Northwest Classen and Bishop Kelly, 8 p.m. 5A girls, I'm getting there. Booker T, Bishop Kelly girls, Friday, University of Tulsa, 6 o'clock. And then 4A boys, Southeast and Ford Gibson at TU, Saturday at 1 o'clock. And then I know this one was just decided yesterday. 4A girls will be Clinton and Verdigris at TU at 4 o'clock. Clinton and Skytick were supposed to play Tuesday, but severe weather pushed that game back a day. And it was Clinton that won, beat Skytick 5-1. So it'll be Clinton and Verdigris in the finals, and that'll be it for soccer. You got any soccer tidbits for me?
No, but you're saying Union and Jinx are playing for a football state championship?
Oh, yep, they are. They sure are. It's just spelled differently. Yeah.
Well, we'll go on now.
There you go. Also had here on the rundown just kind of some miscellaneous stuff to hit on before we get out of here. I know you had Coy Hughes to Garber. Is he going to coach? I know he's baseball coach and then what? Football assistant? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I think he's going to be defensive coordinator. Okay. That's going back home. He was the walk home as head coach.
Yeah.
And so he's going back home, which kind of is a common theme. You know, you see that a lot of coaches at some point in their career. It's like it's time to go home. And that's what Coach Hughes is going to do.
And then we have some news that you broke today on Squirtle Twitter. We probably have something up on the website for too long, but Justin Brown is leaving Locust Grove to fill the shoes left by Larry Callison at Tahlequah Sequoia, the girls' basketball coach.
Yeah, and you know, this has been in the works for literally weeks. I've been catching wind of this and for quite some time, and I know that there was some. I don't want to say there were hurdles that they had to get over, but they're just. I think there are extra steps that they have to take, and so it's taken a little longer for word to get out there. But we have it on good authority that it is happening, and you know, Justin, a very accomplished coach, wanted at Pawnees, wanted at Locust Grove, and of course Sequoia Tahlequah. At one point I think they had Coach Callison talked into coming back, and a day or so later he just kind of said, I can't do it. I think maybe he gave them some names and said, if you guys can get one of these guys, please do. And I think Justin Brown was on that list, and he'll be the next girls coach for the Lady Indians.
I might see if I can try to get Larry on sometime this summer and kind of have him just talk about his coaching career, because I'm sure that would just be one story after another for probably 30, 45 minutes. We could probably ask two questions and be good.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, one of the games that I was at, he was Eufaula boys, and, he was him at Eufaula and Kingfisher in the quarterfinal round, duking it out. Curtis Lofton, who was well known in another sport, but, Curtis and his son Grant Callison were going head to head, and just a fantastic game that Eufaula got the best of Kingfisher in, and that was just a really hard fought game. I'm sure he could tell you all kinds of stories like that.
Oh yeah, so I'll put that on my list of things we can try and get some good interviews this summer and get Larry Callison on there and see what he has to offer for us. Last coaching move, Chris Kiot. Always worry if I'm saying that right or wrong, but going from Laverne to OBA for football.
Yeah, Coach Kiot had a great run at Laverne, ready to get back into the 11-man game. So he's headed over to OBA, where Jay Mendenhall's been the head coach. Coach Kiot's going to step into the head coach role. Mendenhall's going to be, an associate head coach, going to stay on the staff. And it may not be all of the staff moves that OBA is making. There might be some more in the works, but not ready to be out there yet. But, that's another one of the coaching moves we've had out here. I got a text the other night. I think Laverne has their man. The players were told to coach, but I haven't seen anything as far as board meetings go or anything like that. So I'll wait on that one. But I do believe the players have been told who their next coach is going to be.
Okay. Well, a little bit of football stuff. Bishop Kelly, Zach Middleton committed to OSU. And then on the same day, Sepulpa's Eli Williams and Bishop McGinnis's Dominic Richardson committed to TCU. Been meeting to get something up on the website on that for days now and keep getting sidetracked with spring sports. So we'll have something on that. And then I'm also going to embed a tweet from Channel 2's Jacob Toby here in town on how Eli revealed his decision. Looked like it was kind of a hat was inside of a box and he pulled it out or whatever. So I'll have that on there. This is just kind of the time of year where you're going to start getting a lot more football recruits making commitments. They'll start doing it before football season rolls around. So
This is when coaches can actually kind of come see him, communicate with them. So you'll see a lot of the bigger names make their commitments, but you'll see a lot of the a lot of the D2 coaches are out there, and smaller schools they're hitting the trail and being seen in a lot of schools. I know a lot of coaches are coming through here right now.
Yeah. And then I was going to close it out by mentioning the Squirtle Shootout, big basketball tournament this summer coming up on June 8th at Cushing High School. This is going to be a big day of basketball, and you can kind of hit on that if you want.
Yeah, June 8th. I think the games will actually take place in the middle school gym. Cushing's got fantastic facilities. High school, middle school, doesn't matter. But, on the girls' side, some of the teams to look forward to, Sulphur, Barnum, your Class B champ, Lomega, Kingston, who's been right in the mix in 3A, Shattuck, they were, they're on the doorstep of making it in Class A, Chisholm, Dale, your 2A runner-up, Perry, Calumet, Garber, Cushing and Cashin. On the boys side, Cashin, Cushing, Garber, Garber state tournament team, Calumet Class B state runner-up, Perry, oh so close in 3A this year, Oklahoma Union, Adair, Rejoice Christian, obviously, state champ there, I believe. Dale, always in the mix. Kingston, your 3A champ. Varnum and Minko. What we've got planned, I believe, is they're going to have multiple courts going. We're going to live stream every game on the main court, so I think pretty much every team will be featured at one point throughout the day. At the same time, we're going to, we're going to be there interviewing coaches and players and talking about their summers, maybe their past season, if we didn't get a chance to talk to them before. And then, of course, obviously, the upcoming season and what everybody's outlook is. So, we'll Scored Alive will be there. We'll be live streaming a lot of games, but then we'll have a lot of content after the fact as well. So be looking for more on our social media platforms and on our website on when we'll be there.
Sweet. And you mentioned Dale on there, so I think that's a good time to begin the show and end the show mentioning Dale, just because all the Pirate success this year. So there you go. And then in the coming weeks, you know, couple weeks ago we had done like an MVP of the week. We can bring that back next week and maybe hit on what some of our highlights were of spring sports season and kind of do some of that stuff. So you got anything before we close this up?
No, man, just for this week, you know, you're my MVP.
Well, I wouldn't have been until I had plugged in the soundboard right before we got started. So So, really.
I wouldn't do this twice now.
Yeah, really came up big there. What, one time I was talking to David Glover without the USB cord plugged in, and this time it would have been the soundboard. The soundboard is a lot more, it's a dead giveaway because it's not lighting up or anything, and the volume's always spiking back and forth, so I can always tell if it's not plugged in. So that would have been the big tipping point towards the point I would have hit record on this thing.
Well, I'm glad you got it figured out this time.
And I can't guarantee that it's going to be any better when I splice all this together, but we'll see what I can make of it. So thanks for listening in. We're going to be coming. We'll have episodes all throughout the summer. We're going to be circling back to football. I mean, spring football is, you know, right around the corner. We're going to have all sorts of stuff coming up. I'm sure the public and private debate will be a hot topic this summer once everyone has a chance to dissect who won titles here and there and everywhere. So thanks for joining us. For my co-host, Michael Swisher, we will see you next episode. We will try and record next week, and we will see you then. Thanks.